This is a Pinball News production.
Good evening. Some of you are probably really surprised to see me here tonight. Is there anybody here who's surprised to see me here tonight? And why would that be?
Here's the story, nothing but the story. I asked this gentleman about 2 or 3 weeks ago about coming to this event, and he said, I'll try to make it. Then I got an email, you know, the Cubs got a big game, and I just happened to have a ticket for the game. Believe. So I emailed him back, oh, darn, but I understand. I mean, once a sports fan, always a sports fan. And then I got an email, was it last night? He decided to TiVo it to be here today. So thank you, Larry.
Okay. And everybody here now has a part in this. You're participating. Because I'm not at Wrigley Field tonight. I've got my TiVo running. And any of you who should know anything about the game at all, please, I don't want to hear anything. I don't want congratulations. I don't want condolences. I'm running home from here when it's over to watch the game on my TiVo, and I'd appreciate your help. It's long gone. Pinball 2000 is something that was really a special thing for a special group of people that I really had the privilege to be involved with. I've worked on a lot of different product development over my life, and you see it in discussions, you see documentaries, and it looks really exciting and fast moving. And the one thing about developing, you know, engineering products is it's really, really a slow, long process. Until your management tells you you're gonna do twice as much as anybody's ever done in half the time. And at that point, our whole engineering group at Williams, which George Gomez would often describe as warring gangs, with the competition between the different design teams, but we had about 60 people, and everybody just got together, worked amazingly efficiently. We met every couple of days, and we figured out what was going and what were the problems and how do we work out of them. And it was just an amazing thing to be a part of. And we created this thing. We solved 50 problems that were viewed as issues why operators didn't like our product. And we got a game designed, and we got it all together, and it worked pretty well. And so it was just an amazing part of my life. We all know the how the story ended. And the day that Williams pulled the plug on their pinball department, they started a ticking time bomb in every one of your games. And so it is so exciting to hear what these new core guys are doing, because it really gives us a way to keep our games going. I just played the Revenge from Mars. I mean, they've made the game better, which is really neat. And it opens up the possibility of possibly taking this this great platform that was put together and maybe one day taking it further. That may be a long shot, but we can all keep our fingers crossed. So I'm very excited to see and hear all about it. And here are Chuck and Dan.
First of all, I'd like to thank Larry, you know, and everybody at Williams. The reason why this project started in the first place is because Don and I picked up Revenge from Mars Systems. And it's kind of an interesting story. I actually went up to pick up a Theater of Magic from a guy who had gotten a container of games. And I looked at the Theater of Magic, and it was in really bad shape. So he said, I said, yeah, I'm not going to take that from you. And he said, well, why don't you take a look at the Pinball 2000? And I said, you know, I'm big into video games. And I took a look at the Revenge from Mars, and I fell in love with it. So I actually walked home with that machine. And, you know, from there, the story just continues. Before we get too much into that, what we'd like to do, first of all, as I'm sure you're all interested, is we're going to demonstrate the system for you. So I'm going to ask Don to go over and actually fire up the game. To give a quick background, first of all, This is a standard Star Wars game, and we have the Revenge from Mars playfield in it right now. It's running on off-the-shelf hardware that you'd buy at any computer store. As a matter of fact, we made it a point to make this work on the least expensive hardware we could possibly find to try to keep costs as low as we possibly could. So what it works on is a current entry-level dual-core system. As you saw when we boot up the game, the first thing that we do is we allow you to customize the loading screens. So before, when you got a spinning cursor, you can actually put any screens you want in there, and you can accompany it with sounds, either game sounds, MP3s, whatever you want. I actually designed those screens, and we use game sounds for the startup sound. I'm going to have Don demonstrate what has to be one of the coolest features of it. If you have games in your arcade, in your home arcade, like I do, you know, they sit in standby mode. And, you know, they have a really nice light show in the attract mode. When I'm down in my arcade, I usually fire up my main box to listen to music while I'm playing. Well, the thought occurred to us when we got this emulator working, what else can we do with it? And the first natural was to let it play music. So go ahead and fire that up, Don. Now, the music is controlled by the flipper buttons, and as you saw, Don, all he had to do was hit the two action buttons at the same time. Don, if you want to increase the volume on the right-hand side, you can raise and lower the volume. Oops, he switched to Pantera. But you can raise and lower the volume. You can put in any MP3s that you want to. It'll actually play other file formats. You'll actually even be able to hook it up to your home server if you have a media server. You know, a few people have that. I actually have a server at my house with, you know, probably thousands of MP3s. So instead of storing them locally on the machine, I'll actually just hook this up to my server. In the Pinball 2000, the sound system that came with it is actually quite good, naturally. You know, that was one of the things that we really looked at when we did the jukebox. I took it a step further because I just can't go with a stock system. That has an Alpine 150-watt car amplifier in it. It has two Eclipse 2-inch speakers to replace the stock ones and kind of a junky subwoofer, but you could hook an external subwoofer up to it. The jukebox, unlimited amount of songs, and again, go ahead and flip through some songs if you want to, Don. Very simple to choose what song you want. We'll display album art on it. We'll have a random mode. One of the nice things about it, too, is when you're actually running the jukebox, if somebody wants to walk up and play a game, all they have to do is hit the start button. Now, I'm going to invite you up afterwards to take a look at this screen. One of the very important things, rather than use a stock CRT, is we actually use a 22-inch Dell flat screen in it. And you can pick any LCD monitor you want. You can actually pick any CRT that'll hook up to a computer. I chose a Dell 22-inch screen because it happened to be the exact dimensions I wanted to fit the cabinet really well. The stock monitor actually is about 2 inches on either side from, you know, the actual cabinet itself. So the image that you get, you know, like Gomez was talking about the fact that he wanted to encompass the field to be there, you know, that fantasy. The LCD monitor, when you see it, carries that a step further because it's as wide as the play field is. So again, afterwards, I invite you all to come up and take a look. And we'll have it in the exhibition hall tomorrow. Go ahead, Don. A couple of the improvements we made, as you'll notice, it plays the stock games. Made absolutely no modifications. It runs Revenge from Mars and Star Wars Episode 1, which we'll show you in a few minutes. It does a couple of things better than the original games did. Based on the processing horsepower that the original Williams design team had at the time, they really did amazing things with what they had. But today we have a couple of orders of magnitude of more processing power. So one of the first things that we noticed, and some of our, you know, the people that follow our boards noticed, is that in the original game, when you hit pop bumpers, the screen freezes. No matter what's happening on this machine, the screen is constantly updating. And it never staggers. It actually runs at 60 frames per second, which we're not sure, but we believe to actually be greater than the original game's animation frame rate. So you'll notice that the graphics are actually also smoother than the original. So you notice everything functions just as it did in the original game. The one thing that's pretty incredible, too, is the sound system of these games. At Pinball 2000, Williams really did an exceptional job of creating the sound system for it. Revenge from Mars sounds great. We believe that Star Wars Episode I probably has the best sounding, you know, music and sound effects out of any pinball game ever, and we'll demonstrate that when we do the swap. When you start the jukebox mode and you actually start a game, once your game's done, or however many games you play, there's a timeout that brings the jukebox back up. And the user will be able to select that timeout, so you can say, after a minute of doing nothing in attract mode, bring the jukebox up and start playing. And again, at any point in time, you can walk up and hit the start button and override it. So that's a very nice feature. As you can see, we implemented diagnostics. I think Don probably went into it. We're going to have a customized menu system also. What you'll do is to change new core options is you'll open the coin door, and instead of accessing diagnostics, you'll hit two of the service buttons and it'll bring up our custom menu to adjust the system settings. That's actually the last feature we really have to add to the system, because other than the menu, we're feature complete now. We'll catch some questions later if you don't mind, so hang on to it, there'll be a time to ask. Now the next thing we want to show you, and this is probably one of the, what I think is one of the coolest features beside the jukebox, is how many people have actually swapped Episode 1 for Revenge from Mars or the other way around? How many people have done it in less than an hour? Okay, did you actually update the software? Okay, that's cheating. One of the features we did is, before, when you wanted to change playfields or swap them out, you have to remove the playfield. You had to remove the old computer, and let's assume you didn't have a spare Prism or spare daughter card. You had to remove the Prism card from the computer, replace the ROMs, put the Prism card back in, and run the software update, which worked sometimes, but with serial communications, didn't always work great the first time. And I didn't have a lot of luck doing the software update, so it'd take me two or three times, an average of an hour. We auto-detect which playfield you install in the system. So you don't have to choose the playfield, you don't have to upgrade any software. You simply unplug the playfield, plug in the new one, and we auto-detect which it is, and we're gonna demonstrate this now. While we demonstrate it, I actually wanna bring up a design member of the Star Wars team. I think y'all know him, Cameron Silver. Cameron.
Thank you very much. Well, first of all, I'd like to echo Larry's comments about just how amazing it was to work on Pinball 2000 and everything it involved. I'm sure all of you know that I was one of the programmers for Star Wars along with Duncan. But my involvement with Pin 2000 actually started, way back in the beginning. The very low-level system stuff was worked on by Tom Uban, who unfortunately is out of town this weekend. But I recall my very first experience was walking into his office and the two of us sitting down and deciding on the directory structure for all the source code. There was literally nothing there yet. I think he just had like a red border on the display and that's pretty much it. And so that was probably less than a year or around about a year before Revenge from Mars ended up going to London. So the fact that we went from nothing to a complete functioning game for sale at a trade show, I think is pretty cool. And a lot of that is to do with, you know, my colleagues at the time. it's also, well, does anyone have any questions about the development? All right, the question was, how did we develop all of the graphics? Well, as I'm sure you're all aware, the WPC games had the dot matrix display and that had all of that animation. All of the animation for Pin 2000 was actually rendered in 3D. So we used, I think we used Lightwave and 3D Studio Max to render all of those animations. And there was at one point, a large physical Martian made that was probably maybe this tall, this tall off the ground, that the artists used to render the Martians that appeared on the screen. And, that wasn't so new for us because, of course, our sister company was Midway at the time. So they'd been doing this stuff for, probably close to 10 years beforehand. While on Pinball, we had two designers, two art guys working on the dot matrix stuff. That ballooned into five, I think, video artists working on Pin 2000. And even still, that was tight. Like, there was a time where, you know, Star Wars obviously was the second game. There was a time where I think 1 month went by, we did not receive any new artwork because everyone was cranking on Revenge. And, you know, so it was tough to do, but we figured it all out. And plus, you know, we had to do everything from scratch. You know, one of the first things I worked on was just displaying text on the screen because we didn't have a text engine. We didn't have anything like that. So, you know, we had to write code to display text on the screen. We also had to write code to get the text from, you know, 3D Studio Max into a format that would eventually end up in a game ROM that will end up on the screens. So, you know, none of that existed. It was literally, there was nothing there. And what's interesting is that right now there's a booming industry in what's called middleware, which does all of that for you. And you know, if we had that at the time, it would have been great. But any other questions? The question was, why don't all games have a manual plunger? I actually don't know why Revenge only had the automatic and not both. Did Duncan and Larry have the answer to that?
You're absolutely right about what we should have done. It's one of the big mistakes that we made, in my view, in getting the platform started. The culture at Williams was such that we were walking a fine line of trying to make the right choices and be a sensible, profitable company with working with some really creative people that all have a lot of different disparate views of what's going to make a great product. And in the end, we had the automatic plunger on Revenge, and that really was how it was going to be. And John Papaduke, you know, it was going to ruin this game if he didn't have the ball shooter on the game. And so we were in the position of, you know, in either call at the time, would have had pros and cons, but it was, do you say, you know, yes, this is an interchangeable system and live with it, or no, you know, this is really important to the game, we're going to let you do it, and people switching, you know, we'll have to deal with it. As they pointed out, we were showing how at our trade shows how quick it was to switch play fields, and the reality of it is the plunger and ball and button is not the only long, difficult, elaborate process, but getting those ROMs out of the board and reloading the program. As we were where we were when this place went away, it was really clear to us that we were going to really need a version 2.0 that kind of, now that we've learned everything we've learned about making this thing, getting it on the market, saving the company, and what's wrong with it, now we can do it right and make the conversion so they can work.
So the compromise couldn't be to have a manual and an automatic, you know? I mean, that was a compromise that would have worked.
It actually would have worked. Again, we were doing twice as much in half the time, okay? Because Revenge really should have had the ball shooter in there. That would have been the right way to do it looking back. It had the manual. We had the combo technology already down in bunches of games. And that just should have been how we created it. But Revenge was being done in a hurry. You know, that's how George created the game. We really didn't think about that little detail at the time. And it came with the button. And I probably made the mistake of not saying, John, live with the button. And so that's where we went. The same thing went with the art on the sides, right? I mean, if you're an operator and you've got that cabinet, it's not a great fit for Revenge. And I don't know, have people seen the generic art that was done for the sides? There was a generic art package created. And again, we struggled with the decision of, do we put the generic package on so that people can really use this as a system, or do we take this game that's trying to save the company, which was Revenge from Mars? I mean, again, you know, make this thing work, get it out, or we're done with pinball. do we make that really spectacular, okay, with a full, beautiful art package like pinball collectors and owners are used to? And our call was, we'll do it that way. We designed the stickers to go over it for anyone that wanted to work it that way. But there were bugs to be worked out. One thing about the whole Pinball 2000 story was everything was done so quickly and under such pressure that to get these two games out was really a miracle. I mean, you just have to understand how little we had to do and to get it done. And the real tragedy of it all is we had such brilliant designers. They would have gotten really good at making just amazing games. Revenge is a game like similar technology games with some extra gimmicks from the video, but it is not really a game that would be like I think would have evolved as our designers got good working under that hood. So I'm going to give back the mic. I apologize.
All right. Well, before I give this over to Duncan, I just want to say that it's thrilling to see a project such as this because, like Larry said, and like we've all said countless times, we worked really, really hard on this. And, you know, it was hard enough when they canned it after less than a year. But, you know, I mean, it was even worse to realize that these games are just going to, you know, start failing at an exponential rate. Because of the hardware, but to see something like this come along and just give them new life is really, really cool. So thanks.
You may need to help me with this one. Do you remember we took a Revenge from Mars cabinet, because that's all they had, and they had cut the hole for the button in the same triangular shape for you'd need for the ball shooter, right where it had always been, but it was much tighter, just as big as it needed to be. And we loaded a shooter in there, and it missed by, you know, like 3/4 of an inch. It wasn't lined up with the plunger lane at all. Turns out Williams had been cutting that hole in the wrong place for like decades. But no one knew that because in the factory it had enough slop in it, they would just take a big sledgehammer and knock it to the side, you know, and line it up right way off at the side. So that was one of the 50 things we fixed that Larry was referring to, you know, things that had been wrong for years we found and fixed. So, okay, that was my story.
Thanks, Cameron and Duncan. I, you know, from a standpoint of working on this system, probably only next to the original designers and the engineers of it, we have a unique understanding of the way it works. And I've got to tell you, the kudos that the original team deserves for the design and for what they did with these two machines, they've done a number of incredible things. Not only from the gameplay standpoint, not only from the, you know, interchangeability of the play fields, but architecturally, the system is just amazing. It really is. To think they squeezed as much power as they did and made the system do as much as it did back then. We've spent a lot of our time over the last year and a half, you know, making this work well on a current system. You know, they must have had fits making it work on their original system, so they really deserve all the accolades they can get. And besides, I think somebody, you know, hopefully once when this product comes out, we'll build a double shooter. I think I've seen somebody actually do it well. There'll be a button and a shooter lane, so. We popped in the Star Wars playfield. You saw it took us roughly 5 minutes. Without changing anything in the software, we're going to start back up Nucor again. I love this. Anybody who saw Star Wars in the theaters like I did when I was a kid, I just had to put that music in there. Go ahead and hit it, Don. Now, the music on the Star Wars is actually, it's a lot better, actually, than Revenge from Mars. And like I said, the quality of the audio just simply amazed me. When I put the new speakers in that system and played Star Wars the first time with our new sound routines, I was just in awe of the quality of the sound, the quality of the music, the quality of the samples. I think Don's turning it down again. And if you notice, you know, we've implemented everything. There's no tricks behind the scenes here. Diagnostics work, normal volume works. We haven't changed the original system at all. We've only added features to it. And we've enhanced some features. Again, like I said, the rendering is far enhanced over what it used to be because we have the processing horsepower like they didn't have back then. Go ahead and flip the ball around. Now, the funny thing about Star Wars over Revenge from Mars is we spent our first entire year and a half of development working on nothing but Revenge from Mars. So we got that working really well, didn't have any problems, and it was time to go to Star Wars, and we figured, eh, we'll drop it in, no problem at all. There must have been, you know, there were some differences on Star Wars, and it, you know, made us do some different things and showed some things we had to improve in the emulator. Star Wars was a little bit of a trick getting working, but now that we've gotten it working, we've actually improved the emulator overall. Revenge from Mars actually plays much better. Star Wars actually required, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, I think it required a little more processing power than Revenge from Mars did, as far as some of the things it does, some of the video, things of that nature. At least that's what I've heard, and I could see that that would make sense. But again, if at home you have one machine and you want to swap play fields, what was an arduous task before is now quite simple. You know, I had one machine, I had the Revenge from Mars, and I bought that episode one play field. Don's not very good, you'll have to excuse him, but we're good programmers, not good pinball players. I bought that Star Wars episode one play field, and I would only swap out the game once every 3 or 4 months, not because I didn't want to play both games, but because it was such a task that, you know, I would, Don's really not that good, but he's in front of all of you, so we'll give him a break. Yeah, it isn't level on there. But as you can see, Star Wars is working great, and you can fire up the jukebox, Don. And there are other features we'll add to it. We're gonna probably hit market with the emulation. We're definitely hitting with the jukebox and some of the additional improvements that are made. We have some ideas for some other things that we'll talk about in the future. But that is a basic demonstration of what we do.
So if I want to switch my existing system, the question I'm asking, if I want to switch my existing Pinball 2000 that came out the factory, what do I take out, what do I put in?
That's a good question. What we require out of the original hardware is we require the cabinet. We work with the driver board, the original Williams driver board, unmodified. You pull out the original computer entirely. There's nothing you need from it. The whole tin box is gone. We don't use a prism card. We don't use anything from the original system. You can use the original monitor if you so desire, but the nice thing about using a computer is you can replace it with any monitor you want to. So if you didn't want to go the LCD route, which, you know, hopefully some people come up with better mounting systems than I did. I'm not much of a woodworker. I try. But you could buy a traditional 19-inch CRT, a higher resolution one, and get a little bit better picture than the original CGA monitor that it had in it, and they're readily available. But you just pull the computer system out and you hook ours in, and it's a drop-in replacement. So that's a demonstration. We'll go into questions in a minute here. I promise we want to, you know, let you ask as many questions as you want. We're going to cover a little bit of some additional things, but that's a demonstration of the system. And again, at the end of this, we're going to offer people to come up and see it up close, because that video camera just doesn't do it any justice. And again, you can play it in the exhibition hall tomorrow. So I'm going to turn it over to Gary for a second.
Well, is now a good time to take questions? Or is there anything else you want to say before we get on to questions?
Should we go to history a little bit?
Oh, please, yeah. Perhaps you could tell us a story about how you came to be designing a replacement system.
Why don't you go ahead and start?
I guess we skipped the intros, too.
I'm
a dual degree engineer. I have a degree in electrical engineering and computer science. I've been working on embedded controllers for over 20 years. And I picked up one of these and I said to Chuck, you know, what's going to happen when this thing dies? I mean, nobody's going to make these boards. You know, the ASICs are going to be impossible to reproduce. And we felt like this had to be done. We wanted to do it. We started off on our own. We figured we would do it something like the way MAME's doing it. We didn't know exactly how we were going to do it. And, you know, we quickly realized that was going to be a big task. The MAME software really doesn't have what it takes to do the Pinball 2000. It had nothing for the Media GX that we're using. It had nothing for DCS2. So we started looking around. We were thinking about hardware substitution and actually making our own boards. That looked like it was going to be a pretty big task. So we started looking around, and we found a third developer who had actually been playing with emulators and who's actually the author of PinMame, named Steve Elinoff.
And one interesting point, too, is when Don and I got together on this, we were in my basement looking at my RFM machine, and we had casually talked this over. But we decided we wanted to tackle it, and shortly after deciding how to go about it, we knew that just the two of us, it would probably take too long. So we decided to go looking for talent. And I posted on RGP, I think a year and a half ago, I looked up the post recently, and I said, you know, we're going to do Pinball 2000 emulation. Does anybody, any programmers, any engineers, anybody want to join on board? And the thread just went down and down and down and pretty soon disappeared off the page. I didn't get one person that responded, which I thought was kind of funny, but I understood because so many people in the pinball community have been told, you know, we're going to do this. We're going to make the world's best machine from scratch. I'm going to do this, and nothing ever happened. Well, I was dead serious about it. And the point was, is after we started, we found Steve Elinoff, who was just a major part of the team, and like Don said, an expert in emulation. When we rolled out the first video of what we had done, that initial we didn't get any responses all of a sudden turned into my mailbox got flooded with, Chuck, can I join the team? I'm a computer engineer. I'm an electronics guy. I'm a software programmer. And it was kind of funny because people actually finally realized that we were serious about it and that we actually had pulled it off. I wanted to be very careful past that initial announcement not to announce anything and not to show anything till we had something to show. You know, we had said we were going to do it, and now it was time to put up proof. And that very first video I posted, which was just the very roughest version of the emulator that we first showed working, and it's light years from where it was, the buzz was just simply amazing. Like I said, ever since then, I've just had emails constantly coming in, people wanting to try it, people wanting to, you know, get a copy for themselves, how do I, you know, go about this. And past that, I think we've spent another additional 8 months of really hardcore development on it to get where we are today. But I'll let Don talk a little bit about the start of that development.
Okay. For starters, we don't have the source code. We never did. We didn't reverse compile the ROMs. We thought about doing that, actually, going in and debugging it and figuring out in assembly language what's going on, and that just was such an arduous task. It's worse than changing the play field. It was, you know, we looked at it, it's like, I don't know what's going on. There's all these addresses, and we just said, this is not going to work. Like I said, we thought about MAME. That wasn't going to work. And, you know, once we hooked up with Steve, he actually showed us an emulator that could bring up the few screens that they had, and it really couldn't control a pinball machine. He had keys that could simulate pressing the flippers and the ball draining and whatnot, but he could not run a pinball machine. And he said to us, I'll tell you what, I'll give you guys what I have. I'm too busy. I gave up on this. It's been put in my closet. I don't think it's ever going to be fast enough, but you can use this as a start, and then when you get somewhere, you can give me a call and let me know how it's going, and I'll tell you what I think. And so we ran with it from there. I sat down with the oscilloscope one night, figured out why the parallel port wasn't fast enough. We got that working. A couple other bugs were solved, and next thing we knew, Steve was wanting to jump back in. He got busy. He became obsessed with it, worked day and night. I mean, to the tune of, I mean, he would stay up all night till 4 a.m. every night, and he's running his own business, and he kind of got burned out and said, you know what, I just can't keep this up. And Chuck and I decided to finish the software with him. He's still a part of the company. He's not here tonight, obviously, but he did a lot of work up front, and we're thankful for that.
And as far as Steve goes, the one thing is the emulation, not any one of us could have pulled it off. This is truly an example of where a team's unique talents coming together is able to make something happen that one individual couldn't. It's one of those things where I've been in rock bands and still am. I'm 40 and probably should quit, but Don's in rock bands. We're both guitar players. And it's unique to get people who are good at what they do, really good at what they do, really love what they do, and all gel at the same time. It's a real unique situation. And it just so happened that, you know, Steve was an expert in emulation. The way we go about this, just so everybody knows, is Pinball 2000, the software, is unmodified. When we start it up, the software thinks it's running on the original hardware. Because what we've done is we've taken, you know, the Sirius Media GX chip, and we've duplicated its functionality in software. So the, you know, the code for the Pinball 2000 goes out and says, Media GX, draw me a sprite on the screen. And the media, it thinks the Media GX says, okay, I just drew a sprite. Well, what it did is it hit my graphics routine that actually put the sprite on the screen, and we tell it, hey, I just drew the sprite. So as far as the software is concerned, it thinks it's running on the original hardware. It doesn't know any better, and that's the way this works. And the uniqueness of the team, Steve, again, being the emulation expert, I've been writing games now for, well, actually on and off, since I was 13 years old. And I'm more of the guy, we can do anything. You know, Don and Steve were more of the pessimist of the group, but I'm like, why can't we do this? You know, Steve a number of times would say, well, we can't do that. And I'd say, yeah, we can do it. Let me come back and show you. And it requires that level of optimism. Plus, I have experience in optimizing systems. I took Steve's original graphics work, which drew graphics on the screen but drew them too slowly to do anything, and I totally rewrote the graphics pipeline to make it fast enough to do what it does today. Don, being an embedded engineer, is used to interfacing to hardware, so he took the hardware portions of it, the parallel communications talking, some other issues of, you know, hardware talking. He made that work better than Steve or I could ever do. So it was really our three unique talents coming together and making this thing happen. Like Don said, you know, Steve had come a long way with the emulator, but gave up because he was at the end of what he knew what to do. And when he turned it over to us, like Don said, his intent was just to have us run with it. He didn't think it would do anything. And I saw it and immediately knew, you know, I could spend the next month rewriting all the graphics subsystems and get two or three times the speed we had. Don knew he could make the parallel port work. And Steve had never intended on actually doing anything other than providing us the work he did. And he got so excited, again, he jumped back in. And it was great when we did that. But it's the lightning striking. It's the three guys who got together that made this happen, that if any one of us had disappeared, we wouldn't be here today demonstrating this. It was our three unique talents, our three unique perspectives that made this happen. And that's just a little history on what we've done.
You're getting a bit too technical for me. Right. So can I ask you to clarify? You said earlier that I can get rid of the tin box inside my game, but somewhere the new core board, I assume, needs the game ROMs and the sound ROMs that will allow me to run my Revenge from Mars or indeed Star Wars Episode One. Now, am I right in assuming they're in that tin box?
That's absolutely true. As some of you know who've done this, the software for Pinball 2000 comes on ROM chips. If you've ever done a swap, you've taken off ROM chips, you've put them in. That software is hard-coded in those ROM chips. What we've done is you, as a consumer, need to have a working machine. You need to have your own ROMs. We can't provide them and will not. We talked to Williams about providing them, and they said, you know, you're not under license to do so. So we will not, just to make it clear, as I've tried to all along, we won't provide any ROMs. The one thing we've done is Don, again, being the electronic engineer, he created a board that actually you take the Prism sandwich, the daughter card, and you plug it into this board and it reads the ROMs without even having to remove the individual chips. So it makes reading the ROMs possible. And actually, I think, I'm not 100% sure about this, the ROMs are unique ROMs that a normal ROM reader won't read. There used to be a set of ROMs on Internet Pinball Database that were actually wrong. So, you know, people were under the impression that the ROMs were available in the public domain. They've actually never been available in the public domain. The first time we believe they were probably read outside of Williams is with the board Don created.
Do you have that here?
Board? No, yeah, we left it out in the car. We actually have one of the three prototype boards we built. But yeah, you're absolutely right. We won't be providing any ROMs.
Do I need to save my Prism card?
You don't need to save your Prism card.
Just the ROMs.
Just the ROMs. The only part of the original computer, and that's a good question, that you will need is you will need the ROMs. So, and the ROMs can be read off of our ROM reader.
And there's other possibilities. There are licensees out there, and I'm going to say that there's a possibility that you could possibly, you'll have to ask Williams about this, and you'll have to ask either Gene or Wayne if they're licensed to do so. We are not licensed to provide any ROMs. They may or may not be. We can't answer that question at this point in time.
So what about future games? Is there potential now that there could be games developed from scratch that would run on your system?
Well, and that's the million-dollar question. And we've been approached by a number of people from, you know, people like Clay. Clay hasn't actually talked to us about it, but people like Clay saying, hey, I want to write a game for this. You know, we've been approached by a number of people who can create games, asking us, you know, if we can use this as a platform. It is theoretically possible to use Nucor as a platform. Number one, it's cheaper than implementing all this stuff in hardware. If somebody wanted to create a new Pinball 2000 game today, they would need to reproduce Prism cards, which are two ASICs that are no longer available, and could be remade, but at great cost. So they would have to additionally get Media GX chips, which are no longer being fabricated. Cyrix is dead, so any Media GX chips that are available is the last that are available. So that's a hurdle right there. The motherboards are unique, and without being too technical about it, the motherboards are no longer made, and besides that, the motherboards that were used in Pinball 2000 suffer from a common problem of computer systems for about a 3-year period of time, which is bad capacitors. So a lot of people with Pinball 2000 problems in their computer actually have motherboard issues that they don't even know, and you can see a swelled capacitor. So, you know, the Pinball 2000 platform was probably never thought of as possibly creating a new game because the hardware really, for all practical purposes, wouldn't be cost effective to make. What you see sitting right there runs off of $190 worth of computer hardware and our software. So if somebody with the rights, somebody with the license, you know, comes to us and says, we have permission from Williams, we own patents, you know, all that, we want to use your software to create a game, we're excited to. And we can provide them that vehicle. Now, again, we would need to do it assuming a number of permissions, you know, and there's a lot of legal issues to be met and those considerations, but it makes it a reality that at some point in time, and I know this question is going to come up, so I'm going to jump on it right now, if somebody wants to come out with Wizard Blocks and somebody gets the rights, which that's a whole nother issue, they could use Nucor and we could make Wizard Blocks a reality. I'm not saying that's ever going to happen. I know somebody said they're making it. I know somebody said they want to make it. We as Pinball 2000 fans, you know, when we created this, one of the things we'd love to see is we'd love to play Wizard Blocks. We would. We'd love to work with anybody who can make that happen. We can't make it happen, but we can provide the engine to make it a reality if somebody wants to tackle it.
Okay, that's great. I'm just looking at the time. We've got about 40 minutes left, so I think now will be a good time to take some questions. Yes. Martin at the front. Martin's from England, and he produces, a pinball magazine that's available over the internet from pinballnews.com.
Thanks. Can I just carry on from what Gary was just asking you about loading your ROMs onto the system? You just showed how you swap over the playfield. You didn't put any ROMs in the system. So you plug your ROMs in, and it does what? It loads them onto a hard disk.
What we have, Don's hardware that he created is an EEPROM reader. So what it does with that original software you have is it converts it to a standard format that's stored on a computer. So what we've done is we've taken Don's machine, and I own both machines, so I'm legal. We've taken his ROMs and actually read them off the board and stored them on the hard drive. So on that machine right now are stored both sets of ROMs, Revenge from Mars and Star Wars Episode One. That's why there's never a need to change it.
Right, but would it be easy for me if I knew somebody who had a Star Wars Episode One and I've got a Revenge from Mars, for us to take that file and swap them over, and then whenever we want to swap playfields over, we can swap playfields over?
Of course you could.
Without having to swap the ROMs?
Yeah, we, for legal reasons and for obvious reasons, we say our stance is and always has been, as we've talked, Roger's smiling at me because we've talked to him about it, is you have to own the ROMs. That's our official stance. If you got a buddy down the street with a Revenge from Mars who owns the original ROMs, he burns them, and you got a Star Wars and the original ROM and you burn them, and you guys want to trade, that's up to you. We can't condone it and we can't stop it.
Yeah, okay, let me take someone from that. Can I ask you to stand up and say who you are and where you're from, and then ask you a question? So I can see a guy right at the back, on the left, just on the left. You, sir.
Hello, Michael Hennigan, Toronto. What about the tournament mode?
What about tournament mode? Will that work?
The tournament mode requires, it's a unique situation. That will not be a day one feature. A number of people have asked us about that. And recently, and I don't remember who it was, went to the trouble to create a website to run tournaments, which is really cool, by the way. Yeah, and he's posted on our boards. So when we looked at it, we had never heard of anybody really doing it, so it was not a day one requirement. What we plan to do after we release this is we want to implement tournament mode, and we want to make it work in such a way that it won't require the custom one only available network card that Williams supports that is no longer made, and I don't know if it's hard to get a hold of or not, quite frankly, I haven't tracked it. But we want to make it work with any networking system through an interface layer, again, without being too technical, so that people can do this. And the funny thing is, too, is actually, besides doing this work, I own a software company that does web pages and applications. So Don and I have actually had some ideas for extending some of the tournament mode options and doing that. So there's, we do want to address it. It won't be a day one feature. It's something we want to address in the future as an upgrade. And the nice thing about this system is we're gonna sell it with what you see today. I don't wanna make promises on the future. You get what you get, you're gonna get a great system. It's gonna run your games better than it ever has. You're gonna get a jukebox which you never had, but you're also gonna get upgradability in the future. And we do have several plans to do additional features and do additional things after it launches. And that is definitely one of them.
Can you give an indication of the timeline as to when your product might be available for purchase?
There's two portions to that. The first part of that is the software done. And in the mad rush to get to Expo with a good working product that we can demonstrate, I've spent way too much time, I don't even really want to mention in public how much time I've worked on this lately, my wife will tell you, but I've spent an enormous amount of hours in the last month with the list of final bugs that we had, and I'm quite happy to announce today, as of Tuesday of this week or Monday, we've taken care of all those bugs. And some of them were quite major, and one bug actually Steve worked on back when he originally started the emulator, couldn't figure out, and we worked on for 3 months on one bug. And Don and I were talking, it's one of those things where you finally solve this one simple bug, you figure out what it was, and you're saying, if we had the source code, this would have taken 5 minutes. But it's another example that we didn't have the source code, and we had to experiment with what the system wanted. I told Don, I said, it's like a lion in a cage. The original software, we can't communicate with that lion, but what we can do is we can poke at it with a stick, and we know it's going to bite us. We can feed it, and it's happy in turn. So we did the same thing with the software. When we had issues, we would feed it what we thought it wanted, and it wouldn't do what we expected it to do, so we knew that didn't work. And quite frankly, on this one issue, I became more familiar with everything Pinball 2000 than I ever cared to want to be familiar with for something that ended up being very simple, but, it was just one of those things. So, long story short, the software is almost done. That's the good news. We really have one major feature to implement. It's not really that major. It's utilitarian. That's the menuing system. Right now, we provide changing options via the command line. But we want it so you never have to connect a keyboard if you don't want to. That'll approximately take us a couple of months to finish. So hopefully by the end of the year, the software is done. The second part of that question is licensing. We are not currently signed up with anybody. We're not signed up with Williams. We're not approved by Williams. We're not signed up with Gene. We're not approved or under Gene's umbrella, and we're not with Wayne. So right now, we're by ourselves, and due to some things we found out recently, we are most likely going to have to work with one of those parties. And that is probably going to be our last major hurdle in getting this out, is negotiating, you know, the terms of the agreement to release this. And currently, actually, we've been negotiating those terms for the last 2 or 3 months. So I've been alluding to on our board the fact that we've spent, you know, there's a number of things I've said, you know, we're getting close, and we weren't close. You know, I there's things I want to tell you, there's things I got to tell you, and we're not close. Damn lawyers. We love lawyers. Don's dad's a great lawyer. Don's brother's a great lawyer. But, you know, sometimes these things take time, and it's worth doing right, because the one thing that's very, I wouldn't say it's unique about us, but when we did this from the get-go, we fully believed that we could do this on our own and we wouldn't be violating any issues, any copyright laws. We wanted to be above board with it, because there's enough that goes on in the pinball community where people try to do things under the table. As a matter of fact, we contacted Williams, I think as we stated in the Pin Game Journal and Pinball News, 6 months ago, maybe more, and asked Williams, we said, hey, here's what we plan to do. Do you guys have any problems with it? And Roger, who's sitting right there, who's been a great guy to work with, said, do us a favor, submit a paper on exactly what you guys are doing so we understand, first of all. So we did that. We created a short prospectus, if you will, a quick, here's what we're doing with Pinball 2000 with our emulator. We provided it to Williams because we wanted them to know. We didn't want it to seem, or we really didn't want to do anything underhanded. We wanted to know if there were problems. We wanted to know if we were going to run into legal issues. We didn't want to spend all this time and money and come out with a product and put it out to market, not to do our homework and to find out we have legal issues once it hits the market. We're above board. We want to do everything lawfully. If people own patents, if people own rights that we need to pay, we will do that to get the product out. That's what we're in the process of doing now. So the long answer to your question is, the software will hopefully be out soon. It's dependent right now on contract negotiations, if you will.
Okay. You kind of preempted what I've got in front of me, which I got an email in the last week from Wayne, and he's asked me to read out a couple of things. I think you've addressed them already, but for Wayne, I'll read them out. He says, you say you have WMS's blessing, but in my hand is an email giving permission to initiate legal proceedings from a WMS patent lawyer.
Should we address these one at a time?
Any comment there?
We definitely have a comment there. And let me back up a little bit, because there's been a number of rumors and there's been a number of miscommunications and some, quite frankly, propaganda that TASS would have been proud of in the old Soviet Union. So I'm sure some of you will ask me these questions. I may head them off ahead of time. But let's go back to when we contacted Williams. We knew we were going to have a problem with one individual. So I think you all know who it is. It's no secret. So we asked Williams. We said, Williams, here's what we're doing. Here's what we plan to do. And we said, number one, can we use ROMs? We said, can we include them in the kit? Can we license them from you? Can we license them from Wayne or Gene? They said, no, you can't use ROMs in your kit. We said, okay, we won't. And we got nothing official back from Williams, but Williams was very appreciative. And Roger, if I'm stepping on anything or you'd like to talk about it, you're welcome to.
You can do it just fine.
Okay. But Williams said unofficially, you know, that we have no problem with what you're doing, which is what we reported to Pinball News, I believe, to Martin. So Williams officially would have mean it would have had to have been writing contracts, said, we don't have a problem with what you're doing. As long as you don't provide the ROMs, you guys are okay. Well, that went out in Pinball News. You know, and it's kind of like setting gasoline on fire. You know, if you set the gasoline on fire and you walk away from it, there's gonna be repercussions, and we knew there'd be repercussions. So what happened was kind of unexpected. Wayne, and this is my understanding, so I'll just tell you what happened. We get a call back, I think, 2 or 3 weeks later from Williams' head lawyer, actually, I believe it was. And he said, there's been a, and I won't say this verbatim, I'm saying it to the best of my memory, said, there's an issue. Wayne's contacted us. He has a patent that he bought from us. I believe that's the case, and that he is saying, and he's brought it to our attention, that you are violating his patent. And we had actually already been through a patent search, and quite frankly, we hadn't run across the one he said we were violating. So we had a conversation between our lawyer, the three of us, Wayne, William's patent attorney, head patent attorney, I believe, William's head attorney, and I think that was it on the phone. And their head patent attorney said, Wayne bought a patent from us. And this patent is for Pinball 2000, obviously. And we believe you're in breach of it.
Can I read the sentence?
Yeah, actually, I'll let Don talk about this for a second.
I'd like to read the sentence to you that they are talking about. In fact, I have both patents here with me that you guys can look at if you want. It reads, he said, well, if you look at patent number 6036188, a controller responsive in part to said sensor signal for selecting the content of said virtual image. They believe that means that this controller is deciding what's being displayed on the glass, and by replacing that, we are calling that an impermissible repair. And they're hanging their hat on that. We felt that was a kind of a weak argument. You know, our attorney said the same thing. He's like, yeah, that probably wouldn't stand up, but, you know, the problem is, are we going to be able to defend this in a federal court, and maybe not even in Michigan where we live? And the answer is probably not. So they said, well, you know, then you have a choice. You can work with Wayne or Gene, and Wayne happened to be on the phone. He said, not interested.
Well, and actually, to interject for one second, William started out by stating that they believed we were in breach based on this patent that Wayne had bought. Wayne took over the conversation and said, I bought, and please don't take this as verbatim. Again, this is from memory, and I'm going to do my best to try to, you know, recall what was said, but it's a gist of what was said. He said, I bought a majority of the Pinball 2000 patents. This is Wayne speaking. He said, I believe I own all except the ball trough and one more that he conceded Gene.
Lockdown bar.
Lockdown bar. He thought those were the only two patents that Gene owned. And he said, therefore, if you want to license this, you have to work with me. Well, we got off the phone, and again, you know, we talked to our attorney, and he said, it's dubious as to whether this would hold up in court even, or if it would even go to court, because comparing Nucor to such a broad definition as a controller is, it's a broad definition. But again, like I told you, we're not rich. We're not extremely rich. We didn't build this to fight in court. We built this to run pinball machines and to provide you guys a product. So, and if truly we were in breach of a patent, we were unaware of it at the time, you know, we need to pay licensing fees, because these guys paid a lot of money to Williams to license this technology, and if they truly own it, and if we're truly in breach of it, we owe them money. It's only fair, and we don't dispute that at all. The interesting part about this, and quite frankly, I don't think many people know this. As a matter of fact, I think almost no people know this except some of the people that we talked to today. Gene Cunningham actually ended up coming and talking to us while we were at Pinball at the Zoo. And he came up and he was excited about what we'd shown. We showed a much earlier version of the software, but he came up and he said, this is incredible. And he said, I'd like to work with you guys, real cordial manner. And he said, I own a number of patents, you know, and the funny thing that we all get a kick out of is if you ask Gene, Gene owns all the patents. If you ask Wayne, Wayne owns all the patents. If you ask Williams, they don't know who owns the patents. Some of them own it. So, you know, again, we're willing to work with whoever. After this phone call with Wayne, Gene said, so what's going on, guys? And we said, well, here's the deal. Wayne called us up through Michael Blankenstein, I think is his name, and if I got that wrong, I apologize, and said, you guys are violating a patent. And Gene said, you know, and you got to know Gene. Gene said, well, why don't you guys come on over and we'll pull out the paperwork. So we drove to his house, which was interesting because we got to play Wizard Blocks, but that's a whole other story. And Gene literally pulled out his file of all the Williams paperwork, and I'm not sure if it was all of it, but a ton of Williams paperwork, and we sat on his couch, actually a number of couches, and started handing out patents. And, you know, we're like, ah, a bumper, great. You know, what the hell's this? Just great, pass it on. And I looked over at Don, and Don has got this piece of paper, and Don just stopped. And he went, and he kind of looked at me, and I looked back at Don, I'm like, what do you got? and he turned it around, and it was a patent for Pinball 2000 with a picture of a Pinball 2000 machine with a Monster Bash Translite on it. It appeared, and we're not lawyers again. So this is, again, I want to state, it looked like it had been transferred from Williams to Gene. It looked like Gene had purchased it. So it looks like Gene owns patents that Wayne is unaware of as far as Pinball 2000. Again, we're not lawyers. We're not. And we're not claiming that he definitely owns this. We're not claiming anything at this point in time. It's just what we saw. So what we said to Gene is we said, Gene, if this is the case, what we need you to do is we need your lawyer to make sure, number one, that the patent's valid. You know, that the patent was, that you own the patent, that the patent was renewed if it lapsed. You know, we don't know what we're talking about sometimes, but we need to know from a lawyer that this is a valid patent that you own that covers Pinball 2000. Gene's patent is actually newer than Wayne's. And again, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm going to explain what a lawyer has explained to me, and I'll let Don talk about this for a second. But Gene's patent, or Wayne's patent, looked like a patent that Williams applied for as it was creating Pinball 2000, or an earlier patent that broadly described the systems. Gene's patent looked like a patent that a company, when they're developing something and they come up with a new idea, they'll patent that idea in broad strokes just to get legally protected. Then they'll come back and revise it once details are done. That looked like what Gene owned. And we again left the ball in his court and said, do us a favor, have your lawyer check with everybody involved, Williams, with patent office, with everybody, and come back and tell us that you definitely own this, that this is rock solid. You know, if it is, you know, we can work with Gene or we can work with Wayne. I'll let Don talk about him for a second.
Well, first I'd like to read the right out of Gene's patent that he allegedly owns. And it says, the control unit, which includes a controller and memory for storing game instructions and video images, is coupled to the plurality of input-output elements. The controller, that we mentioned in the other one, executes the game instructions to cause the video images to be displayed upon the video display. Says the same thing in different words. So I think he's got every right to make Pinball 2000 if he owns this patent, if he really does.
And so far what we've heard, and again, you can't, we're not saying definitively that this is for sure rock solid, locked in stone. Because as we talked to Williams today, it seems that Williams was somewhat unaware that Gene owned it. And we're not sure that that's the case or not the case. But we provided them with the patent numbers and said, you know, here's the deal, check it out, let us know, because we're very interested too. So we have been told by Gene's lawyer that they do indeed own it, that it is indeed valid. And I don't remember more details, so I won't go into that. But the interesting thing about all this, and the thing that makes this whole drama even more interesting, is Wayne thought he owned the exclusive rights to Pinball 2000. It appears that may not be true. And from what we've been told from Gene's lawyers, and again, this is what we've been told, Gene owns the exact same rights to Pinball 2000.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. There's some patents there if people want to come and have a look at them. I'd just like to add, I guess it's rumor as far as I'm concerned, but you said that Gene owns the rights to make Pinball 2000. As I understand it, Gene doesn't actually own the rights to make complete games, but he may indeed have patents on elements.
That's true. That's separate, though. Owning a patent is a separate issue from making games or not making games.
I'm going to let Wayne have the last word on this, if you let me, because he's given me 3 points that he would like to make, and I think you've really addressed them. But one, he says that there are legal issues to be resolved before the product can go on sale, and I think you've acknowledged that, yeah?
That's true.
And this is not a court, this is not a trial, or indeed any sort of hearing. Legal hearing. He says he has not been approached for a licensing deal.
And that's absolutely true, too. And as Don said earlier, Gene approached us with his hand out saying, wow, you guys have done an incredible job. I'd like to work with you. The only thing we've ever heard from Wayne, directly, indirectly on his website, is he doesn't need us. He doesn't want to work with us. And again, this is just hearing from him, and we've received a number of threats. So we've never received an invitation to work with Wayne, I'm sorry. God forbid me for doing that. But we've never received an invitation to discuss it. Now, in all fairness, after Wayne told us he didn't want to work with us on the phone when we talked to Williams in that conference call, he said, I'm not as bad a guy as everybody makes me out to be. Give me a call sometime. We could talk about this.
Well, one other thing he did say, he is already making Wizard
Glass. Yeah, and he is already, there's another interesting point to this, and it's, Wayne's not going to get the last word. I'm sorry, it's our presentation. if he wants to do his own presentation and come to the U.S., he can get the last word. We obviously, as everybody here who owns a Pinball 2000, wants a Wizard Blocks. I mean, if anybody came out with a Wizard Blocks, involving us or not, Don and I would be the first two standing in line to buy the damn thing. Now, Gene would love to make a Wizard Blocks, I'm sure. You know, he's talked about it in passing. We could provide that help. Wayne has already stated that he's working on Wizard Blocks. The interesting point to this is when we talked to Williams about getting ROMs and about some of the issues, Steve had asked Williams, he said, what about Wizard Blocks? You know, is there a problem? Could we possibly make Wizard Blocks? Williams' answer to us, and I'm going to do this from memory again, and please correct me if I'm wrong, it's our understanding, and I think it was either from Roger, if it wasn't from Roger, it was Steve Malcuso, their head lawyer, said that nobody has rights to make Wizard Blocks right now. So Wayne has said he's already making it. According to Williams, he doesn't have the rights to make it. Now, one of them's confused. I'll leave that up to you to decide which. But, you know, it's our intention that if anybody came along with the true rights to make it, we're there. Because we want to see that happen. It's more than just making the old machines work. We truly, truly love Pinball 2000. This thing was meant to have new playfields thrown in it, new software. We can make that happen. I mean, all the hard work we put in will not only keep these things alive, but it makes that a reality, and we're here to try to work with whoever we need to make that happen.
Okay. That's nice. That ties in from something Cameron said earlier. In Clay's presentation about we should be looking to the future rather than the past. So I like that. Wayne's last point is William sold Pinball 2000 rights to us. Us, I presume, meaning his company. I guess he's not aware that Gene may or may not have similar rights.
He has definitely made that claim that he is the only owner of rights to make Pinball 2000. But if Gene's attorney gets, and Gene's attorney has really already gotten back to us and said that Gene does have the rights. If that's the case, I think once Wayne, whoever's the first to call him or to post this info, there's going to be a nice explosion happening in Australia. Thank God it's clear across the pond and we don't have to see it. But I guarantee you in a couple of days, this information will get to him and I'm interested to see the retort.
Okay. So back to the floor. Clay is apoplectic down the front and would like the microphone. For those that don't know, Mike Clay does a lot of good work. He maintains the Marvin website with lots of great information for people that are trying to keep their machines running, and he also does the Topcast programs.
Okay, in regards to the ROMs, I'm confused. The ROMs contain like version 0.6 of the software. They're frankly not usable they're barely usable for both games. Why are you guys concentrating on that? I mean, the free downloads for version 1.4 and 1.5 for Star Wars and Revenge for Mars are the software that you're really ultimately running. What's the deal with the ROMs? If I own the game, I have the ROMs actually in my greedy little hands, why do I need to load these anywhere because they're really not being used?
Well, there's confusion, and Wayne was under a wrong assumption, and I think you are too. And that is that the ROMs that are, not the ROMs, they're patches. They're not complete ROMs that have been available, the 1.5, 1.6, and the 1.4. They're patches to the existing code. And those patches are, without being too terribly technical, they're loaded in flash ROM on the Prism card, and they overtake some of the functions. You know, they update the existing code.
Right. So you're saying, wait, is Duncan still here? Duncan? Please answer this. The ROMs, are the ROMs, is there any code in the ROMs after you flash the system? Is there any of the original code that in the ROMs that's still being used?
Yes, pretty much all of it. The ROMs contain all the graphics, all the sound, all the code to the game. And then the updates go, and it's basically a little update portion that overlays the original. So it's running instead of the ROM in that little tiny section of address space, but all the rest of the ROMs are still used. So you can, if you want to update a graphic or a sound, and you can fit it in that little update space, what is it, like a megabyte or something? It's pretty tiny. Sure, but for the most part, it's just going to be code updates in there. But you need the ROMs for all the graphics. I mean, all those 3D graphics take up a lot of space, all the sounds. So
that's a misconception that Wayne had, too, because Wayne had the ROMs right or wrong, and we think it's wrong that it happened, but he had the ROMs removed, or the updates removed, from the Internet Pinball database after all the years they've been out there, because he thought our whole plan relied on using those updates, because everybody, and I guess you were under the assumption, too, and a lot of people were, that those were the complete ROMs, complete game code, when it really is just a software patch.
Okay. Well, thanks for clarifying that, because I guess I was confused.
And I want to clarify another thing about Wizard Blocks. Basically, the code on that game consists of like half of one mode. You can flip the game, you can score points, you can knock a little guy around, but that's not even remotely a complete game. If someone's going to actually produce that game and expect anyone to enjoy playing it for more than about an hour, they're going to need to do a whole lot of coding and graphics. So in addition to questioning Wayne's ability to get a game out in general, he's going to need some 3D artists and sound designers and a good game designer.
And Duncan's right. It's one of the things that I was really excited about going to Gene's house, as you can be as excited about going to Bloomington, Illinois, but to play Wizard Blocks, because being a Pinball 2000 aficionado, I mean, it's our holy grail to play the game. And I had heard from guys like Duncan saying the game's not done, to hearing people say, well, the game's pretty much done. And we went and played it, and I played a full game or two, and it's not done. It's obvious it's not done. Anybody who says it's completely done is not really played the game. It's, if people have complained that Stern has not shipped full code, if they played Wizard Blocks, they'd vomit, basically. So it's one thing, and I think both have talked, I think Wayne's intention, and I guess I shouldn't tell you what his intention is, I don't know that what it is exactly, but I think any time I've heard, they've wanted to release the ROMs as is and play it as is, and as Duncan said, it would be cool to have it, and the play field, by the way, is amazing. If you ever get a chance to see that game, I've heard, I think Larry talk about it, I think I've heard you talk about it, I've heard Pat Lawler talk about it. The play field, where they were taking Pinball 2000 with that, the game software, I kind of just went what everybody did and said, it needs a lot of work. But, when you see the ramps lift up and the shots under the ramps and you see the spinning lights and you see the shot, it was a Pinball 2000 game that focused on pinball shots in addition to the cool graphics. So, I still love Revenge from Mars and Star Wars Episode 1. But I personally, and this is my personal opinion, feel that it was going to be the first true hardcore pinball game for Pinball 2000 that a pinball player who loves making pinball shots would love, and the graphics would be the icing on the cake. So we have even proposed publicly and privately, we agree with Duncan, absolutely, that you could release the ROMs, but people get bored with it right away. We've proposed even offering to finish code for anybody who's willing to take the whole project on. Don and I have both programmed a number of games. We have experience. We would even possibly, and this is all hypothetical, I don't want to get anybody excited, number one, that this is happening. This is a if somebody came along, if somebody had the rights, if somebody had the dollars and the willingness. There's a lot of ifs here before this would happen, but if they did, there are people who could theoretically finish the game and really make it what it could have possibly been. So that's my take. Do you want to say anything more about it, Duncan? Okay,
thank you for that. A question from this side. Someone up the back.
That's a tricky question. I'll address part of it, and then I'll let Don take it over. Okay. Yes, it's possible. Yes, we've thought of it. Yes, we've planned on it, but it depends on licensing issues. I'll let Don talk.
Yeah, one of Wayne's threats, he has a semi-valid point. He says that if you go and turn on a solenoid and it ends up getting too hot, you could burn your house down and sue Williams. I don't know how true that is, but we do know how to control the machine. Clay's got a guide to actually doing it yourself. You have to be a little careful. They're using 18 volts on the lamp, so if you leave the lamp on, you'll end up burning out the lamp too quickly. They're using pulse width modulation to prevent that from happening. So, yeah, you could write your own game. I could make some open source code that you could do that with. You'd have to be careful. We could make an API set that you actually just tell it basically, I've got these coils and these lights. That is a possibility if it's legal. I don't know. We had thought about it, and we would be certainly interested in doing it.
It's something that it's our desire, however we can make it happen, and again, it has to be legal, it has to be approved, it has to be sanctioned, that we don't want the two games that I have sitting here to be the last two games for Pinball 2000. And I have ideas, assuming we can do them licensing-wise, to extend the platform through software upgrades. You know, if somebody wanted to make a play field, we can certainly program it, provide the hardware, and do all that. The one thing that we did, it was kind of a side effect of doing the Pinball 2000 emulation, is we had no idea that we'd learned so much about how pinball machines run. And, you know, I don't want to say we're experts. These guys are the experts because they programmed them directly. But we've got a lot of experience now in how exactly do you control a solenoid? How exactly do you do the duty cycle on the lamps in order not to burn them out and silver your bulbs with 18 volts? We have that experience. We've actually hooked up oscilloscopes to test the system to make sure that we're running timing-wise right. So we've learned a lot about the hardware, learned about how to control it. The short answer is to this, we want to do that. We want to make that available to you. And if we can get the licensing and we can get the approvals, we will make that happen.
It was actually a secret desire of ours. I think Larry would agree with this. Of that parallel-driven driver board was that people could use that to make their own pinball machines. I mean, it wouldn't even have to be a Pinball 2000. There's just always been this desire of people to make pinball machines, and there was a turnkey driver board, which is one of the toughest parts. Isn't there a blanking circuit on the lamps? I don't think you could fry your lamps.
You can.
Really?
Yeah, it's software controlled.
Whoops. Okay, because that's actually, Clay may have seen this with the slot machines. They didn't design a blanking circuit in there, and so if something locks up, you melt all your buttons down into the cabinet and stuff.
Actually, you're right. If you were locked up, but I can turn a light on and continue to kick the watchdog, and that light will stay on.
At too high a rate?
They just, keep kicking it and doing other stuff, and if I leave the light on and I'm not pulse width modulating it, that light will turn black in a minute.
Whoops, okay. Well, at least in the lockup case, you wouldn't fry it.
Okay, guy over there standing up.
Don shaking his head yes, which is kind of a surprise to me, so I'll let Don answer this.
Well, we have the updates as well. So, and we're going to give you the ability to run the updater if you want with the emulator. So either way, you'll have it.
And that's what he was addressing is, right now the way you do it is when you put the new ROMs in, you run the update every time you put the ROMs in. The way we do it, you run the update once and it'll be permanently updated.
Okay, we've got time for a couple more questions. Over at the back.
You don't lose your fluorescent light. This is simply a mock-up, actually, from Pinball at the Zoo that literally I threw together a week in my garage. I was going to do a better mounting system, but due to time constraints, I just wanted to put a shelf in the damn thing so I could put the computer up there. And the eventual goal would be to provide the cage similar that hung on the same system so you don't lose it and you can keep your original monitor.
Guy in the hat.
My task for, this is how exciting this project has been at times. My task for a month and a half was to buy every form of permanent storage you could for a PC and test it. So I bought USB drives, compact flash drives, hard drives, you name it. Everything that's out there, and I tested everything. It works with everything. So what I did, though, is I also did a comparison of speed, cost, ease of use, and all that. And what it ends up currently being is that the hard drive's a winner as far as for speed purposes, as far as for cost per megabyte. It's definitely the lowest out of all of them. It's pretty quiet. And this machine's been beaten to hell. If you're worried about, you know, just the solenoid shaking a hard drive, I don't think that's as much of an issue in current hard drives because current hard drives self-park, unlike, you know, back then where the hard drive sat on the platter. So there's not that vibration that would affect, well, the vibration wouldn't cause permanent damage. And I've run this system, I've dropped it, I've carried it up downstairs in my house to develop it, I've carried it back and forth a number of places, and I've never had a problem. But your answer is, whatever storage medium you want to use, including coming up right now, the solid state drives from Seagate and everybody will work just fine.
Okay. Well, time for one last question from Dave Marston.
Good question. We're plug compatible on the parallel port. We are coming up with a solution to be plug compatible on the VGA. That's currently in the works. We are either going to create custom hardware to do that. We have a number of ideas. We're going to use a third party card. The only thing right now that we're not plug compatible with is the integrated amplifier that's inside your case that not many people even know exist in there. The little board's actually an audio amp. There's a number of ways we can go, and Don and I were actually even discussing that over lunch, that I, for example, that little amp wasn't going to cut it for me, and I put the Alpine in. Not everybody's going to want to do that, but a number of people will. But there will be people who want to use that existing amplifier because it works well, and we can provide an interface, actually, to that amplifier from the computer, so we can be plug compatible with even the amp. We can provide an amplifier ourselves. And the one kind of question we wanted to ask you, and we're probably not going to have enough time, is we want to talk to you, the consumer, who's going to be buying this, about the options for hardware, and we were discussing that today. Do you want to pick your own amplifier? Do you want us to build an amplifier for you that's plug compatible? Do you want to use your existing amplifier and be able to plug into it? Do you want to keep your existing monitor? Do you want to do an LCD? Because the question is the less that we require you to buy, that keeps the cost down. So we were thinking currently, and we haven't finalized this, of offering options for monitor interface and audio interface. So that for people who, like me, who want to throw their own audio amp in and throw their LCD monitor, all they need to buy is a computer. For people maybe like you that want to use your existing Pinball 2000 amp and use your existing monitor, you're going to need an interface for that monitor, you're going to need an interface for that audio amp. So those would be options that you could purchase. And let me, one last thing is, if you go to bigguyspinball.com, that's our site, if you're welcome to browse it. We don't require you register or anything to see all the posts, but we really, really do treasure your input on this, and especially when we're getting so close right now, this is a point in time where we ask you, our consumers, how do you want us to do this? You know, what options do you want us to make? Here are your options. What would you like? And that'll help us decide on what we want to make for you to make this the best experience possible. So I encourage you to at least monitor that website to know what we're doing.
What was it again?
www.bigguyspinball.com. Just remember me. I'm the big guy. So bigguyspinball.com. I'm sure we'll get another cease and desist for that. And actually, one final funny point. We have never once received one legal document from anyone. Not Williams, not Wayne, not Gene. So no matter what you've heard, there has not been one legal document that's come to our door telling us to do anything. Or not do anything, for that matter.
Okay, and I think that's a good time to say thank you very much for both an informative and entertaining presentation.